Radio Canada International presents Only One Earth, a documentary series on global ecology, drawn from the Stockholm meetings on the human environment, with music by Robert Ruzicka and prepared and presented by Alan Yates.
Only one earth, one world for the living. No second chances, no second time around. The sins of the fathers will not be forgiven. For generations they'll live on.
The scientific and technical community has by and large been irresponsible in not entering into this dialogue. Let me point out what I think the view is, or their role is. It is to state what the implications of the choices are, as nearly as they can be defined on scientific and technical terms. If this course is taken, the consequences are going to be so-and-so. If this course is taken, they're going to be so-and-so. And define where the scientific information ends and where the political public decision begins. If this is done in a way that the people can understand the implications of the choices, then I'm convinced that they will take the appropriate one. I have utterly no sympathy at all with a scientist or technocrat who stands up and contends that because he is an expert in that technology, he also is an expert in deciding whether it should be implemented.
In this program, the scientist and social responsibility as it affects the environmental situation. Has the scientist an ethical and moral responsibility to act as a sort of technological watchdog and keep the public informed as to the implications to the environment of what's being done in science and technology? The voice you just heard was that of Dean Abramson of the University of Minnesota and the Scientist Institute for Public Information, or CIPI. And he, like many others who attended the Environment Forum in Stockholm, are adamant believers in scientist-public dialogue as a check on environmental abuse. But, as Dean Abramson pointed out, it isn't always easy to be a candid scientist today.
To create any action will be dependent on an informed public opinion. A new organ of the United Nations has been created to deal with environmental issues. It's my expectation that this new organ will behave as do bureaucracies and governments elsewhere, and that bureaucracies and governments respond to public pressure. It's rare, in my experience, that any imaginative action has been taken without an informed public opinion. How is this going to be created when the issues are more and more technological ones? 100 years ago, people presumably understood, the implications of the technologies of the day. They were pretty simple. Now, that is not at all the case. It's becoming more and more technical. And how does one create and maintain an informed public in the face of this? It's quite simple, it would seem, that an informed public is going to be dependent on dedicated and independent scientists, technologists, who are willing to speak and work in the public interest, and not, as is so often the case now, working as paid handmaidens of industry, paid handmaidens of the vested economic interests with short-term goals and little else. I can speak of the difficulties of a scientist speaking out in public. I've spoken with other scientists here in Sweden, as well as having substantial experience in the United States, and know the pressures that are exerted from both the universities, in some instances, the bureaucracies in others, the funding agencies in others, when a scientist decides to leave his laboratory, at least part-time leave his laboratory, and enter into the public sphere. Whenever one does this, if you're not effective, nobody cares. If you are effective, in my experience, three charges are usually levied, and they're usually levied in the following order. First of all, that the individual is ignorant. He is not a true expert. After all, the true experts are those working for the industry promoting the issue at hand, and they haven't spoken. They're expert, therefore, go home and do whatever you do. If he disproves that, as is usually the instance, or at least often, then the charge is made that he's seeking personal, political, or economic gain. When my activities are in the field of energy, and initially it's totally nuclear energy, and of course I was working for the coal companies. The people speaking out at, well, just as an example, this is usually pressed and pressed hard, and one that has to be handled with some vigor. Thirdly, the issue is raised that the individual is either the witting or the unwitting tool of a foreign influence. But if anything, in my opinion, is going to be done, it will depend on an informed public. This is true, extremely true, in environmental issues where economic matters, technical matters, health matters, and political matters are often wrapped up in such a way as to be extremely hard to disengage. And remember, there often is no expert on the overall issue. Who is an expert in nuclear power plants? There are plenty of experts on this technical detail, that technical detail, this economic detail. Who considers its overall technical, political, environmental implications? Very few. We need these people. We need them desperately. How will it happen? I don't know. It's difficult to change the established university systems, particularly in a country with as rigid a university structure as seems to be present here, where young faculty members have no security, either economic or otherwise. It's doubly difficult for a scientist in industry to speak out when that industry has vested interest at stake. But if they're not willing to do so, and do it with vigor, with force, and with absolute candor, I think it's impossible to have an informed public. Just as an aside, of course, you need a cooperative press, but that's quite often available. If the new environmental organization is going to be effective, just as if governmental regulatory agencies are going to be effective, this informed public opinion must be present. It in turn depends on informed scientists, independent scientists, speaking freely. And I think that we should devote substantial energies to this, as it is really one of the core issues that will lead to either progress or no progress on environmental issues. Thank you.
Another concerned scientist at the Environment Forum was George Berg, also of CP, and the Department of Radiation Biology and Biophysics at Rochester University, New York. He spoke of the value of direct cooperation between concerned scientist and concerned community.
Back in 1963, not far from here in the city of Göteborg, the local authorities got the bright idea of cleaning up the beaches by building a long pipe that would take the sewage from the city out to sea. A group of citizens and scientists who knew something about fishing and about herring realized that the dirt would go to the herring breeding grounds and destroy a fishery. They started a campaign of citizen information. 9 years later today, in 1972, A brand new sewage treatment plant has just been turned on in the city of Göteborg with no pipe, no damage to herring, and no pollution. It works in a little town, another little town in Sweden, where a local polluter that killed fish was stopped by people who took the water and tested it and proved that he was doing the polluting. It was an industry. It is done in Japan, and it has been working in the United States of America, where scientists and citizens have been working together in various places in small groups, remember, in small groups, for over 10 years to take care of their own environment. Now, the Scientists Institute for Public Information is a national organization of scientists involved in such local work. Let me first straighten out some misconceptions about the Scientists Institute from Glenn Paulson in New York City to Al Nadler in Monterey is about the distance from Stockholm to Istanbul. So we are scattered at our local organizations, each one working with the local citizens and neighbors. Nadler, for example, works on the health of migrant workers in his valley. Paulson worked on the air poisoning by carbon monoxide in a big city in his city. Dean Abrahamson worked on controlling the pollution from a radioactively atomic power plant right in his neighborhood. And Alan McGowan is probably the one who works most on the theory of what we do. But I have been picked by the program group to represent all those kinds of work. So I'll tell you briefly about the kind of thing that works in my own town, Rochester, New York. Now, what we do is, first of all, we have an organization of scientists and citizens. That is, the members are any people who wish to join in the kind of work that we propose to do. What we have done, for example, to begin with, is to choose an issue, and that issue has to be both important to our neighbors, and it has to be controversial in the sense that somebody in authority, some scientist, some expert says there is no problem. If we have an expert to tell us there is no problem, that's almost a signal for us that there probably is a problem. The next thing we do is go out and get the facts, and this is done on a strictly volunteer basis. I don't have to explain to Scandinavians how the Vikings used to operate. There was one entrepreneur who would say, I have an idea, let's raid Rouen, and he would get to the beach and 10 stout lads would come in to pull the oars, and there was an expedition going. Well, you know, I have an idea, let's see how polluted the river is, and I get another friend and some helpers, and off we go to get facts. Now, there are two kinds of facts. There are facts in the official record, and at first we worked very hard to get the facts in the official record. Then we found out it's the wrong thing to do. Officials don't like to give you facts. So all you have to do is make a record of the fact that somebody doesn't want to give you facts. That's a good fact. Then you go out and get your own facts. It's very easy. For example, what we did is measure bacteria in the river, and we found that the river, a beautiful river with canoeing and waterfalls and a beautiful lake with swimming beaches, we found that the water was filthy. Now, next thing you do, of course, is publish, but you have to publish for the citizens. The facts about the state of the environment and some choices of what could be done. The choices before the citizens was to let it go and let the place get dirtier and dirtier, or clean up and pay for it, and there were various ways of cleaning up, and we presented these gradually to the citizens. Now, what happens next is very interesting. There is an instant counterattack. Now, in every case, now we have been, you know, I'm presenting to you a very simple issue just for fun. But we have been in some very hairy ones dealing with radioactive pollution and food additives and what have you. It's always the same thing. When you come into the field, you, as scientists, as far as the professionals in the field are concerned, you're just an amateur. And they counterattack. The scientists tell you, you don't know what you're doing. You don't understand the techniques. The politicians in the government tell you, first of all, that what you said is not true. That water is clean. Then when you have the facts, they say, well, actually, it's dirty, but it can't be helped. That's the political play. The industry tells you, if you make us clean up, we will move out. We will go someplace where it's cheaper. And then it's up to the people. Now, the amazing thing is that the people, bless them, will listen to you unless you do something wrong and turn them off. And I'll tell you in a minute what you can do wrong. But if you do the things right and survive the counterattack, your president of the university did not refuse to rehire you, and you still can teach a class, and your neighbors don't forbid their children to play with your children, then you can go out and get more facts and bring them before the people again. And for example, when our opponent, the professional hygiene, public health and hygiene man, told us that we don't understand the measurements, those bacteria that we are measuring couldn't possibly be coming from people. One of the reasons was that it was illegal to have human pollution in that water. He suggested maybe they come from seagulls. Then we went out and we made... Now you see, the more you get into such a business, the more elegant your tests become. So next time we didn't measure bacteria, we just took a 35-millimeter camera and we photographed the water. We photographed toilet paper coming out of a pipe. And we suggested that seagulls do not use toilet paper. Now, after a few years of this controversy, some very remarkable things happened in our town. One of the most remarkable things that happened is that I am now an advisor to the very people, official advisor, mind you, to the very people who used to tell me I don't know what I'm doing. But another one is that there have been three kinds of changes in the people: cultural, political, and economic. Culturally, in our town now, people feel about the river and the beach the way they used to feel only about their own kitchen sink. It's theirs. Their horizon of their environment has expanded and their concern has expanded.
What's gonna happen to the world and all the people? What's gonna happen to the fishes in the sea? Wait till yesterday they cried and we did, and the fish all died. This time fishes, maybe next time you and me. Time for a little social action, demand a little satisfaction. We got the whole wide world to gain or maybe lose. But the people couldn't understand that while they was sitting on their hands, standing still, they were still making a wrong move. Like the wild thing has learned to fear the hunter, man has learned to fear his own technology. Wait till yesterday he cried, and our eyes were open wide, but our minds were closed, and so we didn't see. Time for a little social action, demand a little satisfaction. Got the whole wide world to gain, or maybe lose. But the people couldn't understand that while they was sitting on their hands, standing still, they were still making a wrong move. So the waste just kept on flowing in the river, and the bombs went off a mile underground. Wait till yesterday, they cried, but we had no place to hide. And the next day, not a living thing was found. Time for a little social action, demand a little satisfaction. Got the whole wide world to gain, or maybe lose. But the people couldn't understand that while they were sitting on their hands, standing still, they were still making a wrong move. But the people couldn't understand that while they were sitting on their hands, standing still, they were still making a wrong move.
The political change is not only that every politician in town runs on a platform of improving the environment, but also that there is a real, honest to God, regional authority for controlling water pollution with money and with powers. And it's working. And the economic changes that our little community appropriated, $700 for each person, man, woman, and child, a total of $500 million to clean up the river and the lake. So there have been changes. Now, this is not a solution. This is not a victory. This is just straightening out the first of a long series of environmental problems. But there has been a change. To us scientists, there has been an enormous gain. You know, there are, this is really like a Viking ship. There are maybe two or three of us skippers in any given mission. We are not a great big team. One of us moves out of town and starts a branch somewhere else. Some young person steps in his place, but there are only a few of us. But this is not play science. This is the best science there is. We find a real problem. We invent ingenious methods. They have to be ingenious because we have no money and no time, so we have to have brains. We get good, solid data. We publish the evidence, and we are not doing something that only our specialist colleagues can admire. We are doing something that our friends and neighbors can understand and appreciate and use. I would like to tell you now what I feel is the basis, the policy that's the basis of such successes as we have had. We put before our people facts, but not opinions. Everything we put out is refereed by two experts who are anonymous so that they can be objective, and nothing, no fact that they disallow gets published under our name. Now, the experts don't censor the opinions, but when an author of one of our publications puts in his opinion, he has to put it in the first person singular. He has to say, I think that, and put his name to it. And it's kept separate from the fact. We have an editor, incidentally, who converts everything written in scientese into plain language, because if it cannot be told in plain language, it is not true. We put before our readers choices, not decisions. We tell people what will happen, what we think will happen, if they make one or another decision. But we don't tell them what decision to make. Now, sometimes you may think that we are biased. As when we tell people, now look, you have been swimming yesterday in exactly the same thing that you flushed into your toilet day before yesterday. That may seem like telling them what to do, but we didn't. We did not tell them, as some fools have done, that if they keep swimming in it, they'll get sick and die. This is nonsense. People have been swimming in that stuff for generations. But they may not choose to do so. Finally, we bring understanding, not authority. We don't say believe us because it's we who say this. We say believe us because behind our bulletin is a table of facts. And any intelligent 13-year-old can read those numbers and get the same conclusions. Now, we have an organization where scientists and citizens work together as equals. In addition, the Institute itself has been of service in setting up new groups in new places and in promoting, in offering this kind of scientific service on national and international issues as we are doing in Stockholm. But there is one thing we are not. We are not members of any of the various groups of people who use our services. We are not political. We have been of service to conservationists, political reformers, political leaders, managers of all kinds of industrial facilities, certainly managers of sewage treatment plants, they get budgets when we come in, and of public health officers. But for every one of the people I named to whom we have been of service, we have been also a pain in the neck to every one of them. We have not joined them. We have given them ammunition that could work for them if they did the job right and against them if they did the job badly. I think that this has been our strength. I think that for an organization, science information organization, to be fact-based in this way and to provide the solid foundation from which action groups can lead action is the most effective way to do this in our culture, in our environment, and perhaps in most cultures and most environments. People are wise in judgment. Laymen are wise in judgment and slow to give trust. The power of a group that is trusted by the community is enormous. Our group started with a deficit of $150 and a membership of 30, and we now have 400 people working fairly hard and a community that is cleaning up its waterfront and a number of other things. I would like to feel that young scientists, particularly their science classes, science teachers in their town, and their friends in the local community will find it interesting and useful to do locally what we have done. Thank you.
George Bird, one of many concerned scientists at Stockholm who called for dialogue between responsible scientists and the environmentally concerned public.
Only one earth, one world for the living. No second chances, no second time around. The sins of the fathers will not be forgiven. The generations they'll live on.
This has been Only One Earth, one of a series of documentary programs on global ecology, drawn from the Stockholm meetings on the human environment. Music was by Robert Ruzicka, and the series was prepared and presented by Alan Yates for Radio Canada International.
Sweet Mother Earth, we've treated you unkindly, even though we know you've only meant us well. Man in his haste has often acted blindly. Oh, the stories you could tell. Only one earth, one world for the living. No second chances, no second time around. The sins